Wait a minute. Am I, Martin Zender, making fun today? Is my goal today on this Monday to make fun of the seven kings of Revelation chapter 17? Is it my sacred quest to expose these kings as pretty little peacocks, baby peacocks, strutting around on the third rock from the sun on a planet that's not even perfectly round, but that's actually an oblate spheroid, existing in the slums of the Milky Way galaxy? Is that what I'm doing? Is that what I'm beginning to do here from my laundry room studio? A guy in a studio with a washer and dryer and a laundry basket and a phone cord and a light and Judy Garland as a 17-year-old actress at MGM. This guy is going to belittle the rulers of Earth? The answer to that question is yes. I'm the guy. I'm the happy guy. I'm happy this morning. I'm on a high, a spiritual high that is producing some sort of emotional thrill. Honestly, this stuff doesn't begin with emotional, soulish thrills. It begins with spiritual thrills. And the spiritual thrill for me, and I want this to be this way for you, as you walk through a time on this earth of great turmoil, of things of relative importance on earth, but in the big picture, nah. I want you to revel, as I am today, beginning this week, in your anonymity and in your having no confidence in the flesh, as a sheep before the shearers. But Jesus Christ is described as a sheep. But a funny thing, he's also described as the Lion of Judah, depending on how you want to look at him. How did the earth look at him? They looked at him as a sheep, as a silent sheep. Pilate said to him, I have this power and you're not speaking to me? Why aren't you speaking to me? I'm Pontius Pilate, procurator of Rome. What's Rome? Oh, you quake. You quake in your boots that you even think of Rome, because Rome was the head of the Roman Empire. Get it? Rome, Roman Empire. And it was intimidating. Only if you allowed yourself to be intimidated, only if you fall for the trick of the pufferfish mentality, only if you fall for the braggadocio of the rulers of this world, by those who would tell you that they have power over you. I go back to what I left off with to launch here into this nasty business of chapter 17, that they would have no power over you unless it were given them. Greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. In that particular verse, the he who is in the world is talking about Satan. But Satan is the ruler of the kings of this earth, and Christ is the ruler of us. So greater is he who is in you, Christ, than he who is in the world, Satan. Satan is greater than Christ. Satan is the one making these kings think that they're great and that they're indispensable. And I think of Benito Mussolini. I saw a archive footage of him. You know, you've seen this guy. Hitler was the same way. These guys are cartoons now. We look at them and Mussolini is doing this chin in the air, nose in the air, chest puffed out, like it's a mating dance or something. It is a mating dance. He's trying to mate with the Italians to get them to have sex with him, i.e. join him in his plot with Hitler to take over the world. Hitler the same way, all these crazy arm gestures. Ooh, Hitler's got an arm gesture. Zoom, it goes this way, goes that way, and then, oh, Hitler, you've seen him on the footage, he does this thing with his hands. And he's got, ooh, a mustache. That's scary. He's got a mustache. This stuff is a joke. It's all a joke. And so the thing is you don't have to say anything in front of these people. Jesus didn't, except for a few great sentences before Pilate, like, you would have no power over me unless it were given you. Another great one was, my kingdom is not of this world. Clue to Christians, Jesus' kingdom is not of this world. And so you and I can eat a banana. We can take a walk. We can have a glass of wine. You can listen to this show and feel comfort and peace knowing that you and I are in the same boat. And the thing is the lifeboats on the Titanic were kind of like pieces of crap. One was a collapsible. It was like a fold-out lifeboat. It was the crappiest of the lifeboats. The lifeboats were little wooden ships. No, ships. They were little wooden boats that maybe held 50 people. They were creaky. They were crappy. The collapsible lifeboat was the most embarrassing of the bunch. But as the Titanic is tilted at a 59-degree angle, this greatest ship ever built, the ship that not even God could sink, quote unquote. I don't know what sorry sap said that. I would rather be on Collapsible Lifeboat D, I think was the name of it, than on the Titanic. And right now, you may be in a crappy little boat, and the world is sailing along at a right sprightly clip on the Titanic. You appreciate the analogy. I think you're better off in your little collapsible and yet seaworthy boat. These boats were seaworthy, the lifeboats on the Titanic. Unfortunately, there weren't enough of them. That was unfortunate. But when the Carpathia, the ship, went to the rescue of the Titanic survivors, they found the survivors in the lifeboats. Oh, some of them were actually on top of a lifeboat. The lifeboat had overturned and the people were clung to the bottom of the lifeboat, which was now on top because the thing was inverted. Good enough. It's good enough. Well, maybe we're on an inverted lifeboat. Yeah, you feel that way sometimes. Well, you're better off here than on the Titanic. And you are surrounded by people on the Titanic. All the first class people. Well, you're in a good position. We have no confidence in the flesh. Our strength is in Christ. We're going to win. That's already known that we're going to win. The people on the lifeboats were saved while the people on the Titanic died. We are in position to win. And you have to understand that. We're in a position to win. You are perfectly placed in your little lifeboat to win. You just have to keep floating. And I don't even think the lifeboats had oars. Did the lifeboats on the Titanic have oars? A couple of them had oars. Lightoller. Yeah, I remember that guy. He was okay. He was the captain of one of the lifeboats. They had makeshift captains on the lifeboats. Suddenly, if you were a person of unusual skill, of unusual leadership skills that had not been recognized heretofore, you could have captained one of the lifeboats that survived the sinking of the Titanic in April of 1912. All you had to do was just stand up and say, I have a vision. And everybody would be like, yeah, we're all for it. What's your vision? Everybody's shivering there. I'm going to keep us engaged. I'm going to tell a few jokes here. I'm going to sing a song for you. And I'll tell you some stories about my childhood. Anyway, I think we're all going to make it. I'm pretty sure we're going to be rescued. So somebody of anonymity, 30 minutes before, becomes a giant when life is reduced to survival on the bottom, let's say, of a lifeboat or in a fold-out lifeboat. that's the joke of lifeboats. Lifeboats are a joke enough. Like, you've been reduced to a lifeboat, but now you're reduced to a fold-out lifeboat or the bottom of a lifeboat. It's all good enough. And so those of us at the bottom of the social rung on the Titanic, we can rise to estimable heights, to an esteemed place by our peers, our few peers. There aren't many peers floating around in the Atlantic on these lifeboats. I think you could yell across the fog to each other, "Hello!" And you can communicate with other lifeboaters there. It became a very intimate community, quite a club now that you survived the sinking of the Titanic. That's quite a club. It's quite an exclusive club, isn't it? And these people became celebrities when they landed in New York, plucked out of the Atlantic by the Carpathia, landed in New York. They were celebrities. Everybody wanted, all of a sudden, they were famous people. Now, you and I, we are also going to be very famous individuals when we are delivered to the shore of our celestial home, because we will have just come out of the biggest wreck in human history. That is the wreck of this earth. We will have come out of it, and people will be in awe, like, "You were on that ship? Oh my God, what was it like? What was it like? You were on it? Like, you saw it sink?" Yeah, we saw it sink. We saw it forming, and we saw it developing. And yes, nobody thought we were anything. Everybody thought we were stupid, unwise, weak, ignoble, and stupid. Yet, because of the disaster, we found something within us, not by our own power, but by the power wrought in us by a higher power in the circumstances. We became leaders in our own right. And all of a sudden, our word had power, whereas it didn't have power before. But believe us, it wasn't like that when we were on the Titanic. Before the iceberg hit, we were nobodies. We were, in fact, probably looked down upon by the Astors of the Titanic, those people in the first class berths. I'm telling you, we were nothing, but yes, we survived it. And now, interesting that all the microphones are being shoved in our faces now. Where were you before? Oh, can you imagine? Jesus Christ, I could use Joseph too. It's like his brothers, before they know him, all of a sudden they're like, pretty excited about Joseph. They don't know he's Joseph yet, but now he's risen to be this great man in Egypt, and they're all like bowy, they're all like worshipy and trembly. It's like, Joseph, where were you before? I've always had this wisdom. I've always had this vision. Where were you before? Where were you back in Israel? You see? That's the time of his testing, when he was given visions ahead of time. And the time of testing was when he went about unrecognized. Just like those people who rose to prominence on the dingy little lifeboats, they were tested during their time on the Titanic, when they had to still maintain some sort of identity, self-possession, in the face of being on the bottom rung of the social strata, the social ladder. That's our challenge now. You must maintain a measure of dignity, and your dignity does not come via your worldly possessions or your position in this life. It comes from the nod of knowing of Jesus Christ. When he nods your way, you ought to feel great. You ought to feel like, I'm going to be all right. You're going to be more than all right. Jesus Christ loves us especially. He's the Savior of all humanity, especially of believers. You're the especially. Jesus Christ, same way. All of a sudden, every knee will bow, every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. And he would rightly be able to say, I don't think he will say, but he could say if he wanted to, where were you before? Where were you when I was a humble little ex-carpenter in Nazareth? Where were you then? Well, nobody recognized him then, because then there were all the posturers. There were the Pilates and the Caiaphases and the high priests, and then it was very hard to recognize him. What an amazing, unique, wonderful, enviable position we are in today. Martin, enviable? What are you talking about? You're broadcasting from a laundry room. Yes, I know. I know. It's a lifeboat on the Atlantic Ocean. This is a Jesus Christ in Nazareth working in a carpenter shop. Not many people know who I am here in this room. Not many people know who you are. Not many people knew who Joseph was, including his own brothers. They probably slept in the same bedroom when they were kids in bunk beds. They were as intimate with him as any family member is with another family member. And yet, did they know him? No, they were clueless. And yet, in Egypt, they're all about Joseph in Egypt. They're all about Joseph. And they're all about Jesus Christ at the great white throne, aren't they? They're all about Jesus now. All of a sudden, they're impressed. They're impressed. Where were you? Where were you? The only way you're here now, the only way you see this now, is because you have a dose of the Spirit of God. That's what it takes. Without that, you yourselves would not recognize the magnificence, the wisdom of a man dying on a cross. Very hard to see when he's dying on the cross. Where were you then? Where were you then? Well, Paul assures us in Romans chapter 6 that we were then crucified with Christ. We were figured to be, in the mind of God, associated with Jesus Christ in that terrible moment, which was actually the greatest moment in universal history. And as we are identified with Christ in his humiliating crucifixion and death, we are also identified with him. Here's the good part of that. In his resurrection. And then now Paul says in Ephesians chapter 2, we are to be seated with Christ in glory at the right hand of God. Not too shabby.